Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million. And tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcast.
You ready?
I am, yeah.
All right, well, let's go. Charlton Thorpe just nodded at me. That means it's time to go. Charlton says it's happening. Hey, everybody, I'm Kyle Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense.
And I'm Matt Levin in for Kimberly Adams. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. It is Monday, February 5th.
Monday. We are going to do some news, as we always do, and then a quick smile or two, and then we will send you on your merry way. Matt Levin, what do you like for the news?
Yesterday was a prominent birthday in the history of 21st century technology. Did you celebrate the birthday I am referencing here, Kyle?
Honestly, I did not know until I read the rundown for this podcast this morning, so no.
Yesterday was the 20th birthday of Facebook. I guess 20 years ago on Sunday, Mark Zuckerberg and his friends in that Harvard dorm launch Facebook. Kai, do you remember your first interaction with Facebook?
Oh, wow. First of all, I didn't know there was going to be a test, so that's not fair.
My apologies.
I don't think I do. I was never hardcore into Facebook, and I have left that part of the Meta empire many years behind. I still do Instagram. But yeah, no, not really. Yeah. It was never a huge thing for me.
I think part of this is generational. Hmm. So Facebook came out when I was in undergrad. And it kind of transformed the college experience.
Wow.
At least for me, and I think for certain millennials of a certain age, I think it's pretty common to feel that way. And I just want to harp on two things that I think have change since Facebook hit, mm-hmm. that I think are still with us today in terms of how it impacts our social interactions. I remember when it first came out in undergrad, nobody liked it. Like the immediate reaction from all my friends and people on campus, there wasn't like, oh, awesome, Facebook is here. But it was more of a begrudging acceptance of, yeah, we all kind of need to be on this because of essentially information asymmetries, right? You don't know where the good party is, at least back then, without a Facebook event invite, right? You don't know if that person you like from your anthropology class is single, unless you ask them, which nobody did, unless you looked it up on Facebook. So what was really interesting back then is no one seemed super enthusiastic about it. And you can kind of see that to this day when you see new technologies being introduced, there's like a begrudging like, like what is I know I'm going to have to use this, but I'm not sure I'm happy about it. You see that with AI, obviously.
Yeah. And you see, I mean, look, even with the, I mean, literally everything, right? I remember getting on Twitter in 2009 going, God, this is stupid, but I have to be here.
That's right. And I think that Facebook was a shift in that, because I remember when the iPad came out, the iPod, which shows how old I am. But like people were genuinely excited for it. There was a positive sentiment towards it. That Facebook, not so much.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
Well, I was just going to say the generational thing is interesting because my kids now, and my oldest son is 25. He's like, Facebook, what? You know?
Yeah.
He doesn't that like that era. And my daughter now is 16, right? She's like, yeah, no, no.
Yeah. Which brings me to my second point, which was, and we'll put this in the show notes, but the Wall Street Journal did a nice little rundown of all the various Facebook milestones since mm-hmm. it launched 20 years ago. And the decision to acquire Instagram for $1 billion in 2012, which a lot of people thought Zuckerberg overpaid back then, probably the smartest decision the company ever made. Because to your point, Facebook is kind of the boomer, older generation social media platform now.
Yep.
And Instagram is still skews younger. Obviously, TikTok is eating into that. But there's a younger demographic there.
I think your other observation here that you put in the rundown is a really astute one. Today's FTC, I don't know about a Republican Federal Trade Commission, but today's FTC would not have allowed that purchase to happen.
Never.
You know, not a chance in the world.
No, never. That's right. Lina Khan, I mean, they are learning the lessons from that era that they look back and they say, well, was Facebook acquiring Instagram good for competition in the social media landscape? Was it good for consumers? And Lina Khan would probably tell you no.
Yeah,
so absolutely. It's a totally different environment.
Yeah, I think you take the qualifier out of that. There's no probably about what Lina Khan would have said about Facebook buying Instagram, you know?
I think that's right.
Not a chance in the world.
All right. That's it for my millennial nostalgia tour. What do you got, Pat?
All right. Well, there you go. So mine, and I think this resonated with me just because there is a child in my house, the aforementioned 16-year-old daughter, who's taking the ACT on Sunday. So this is it's very present. Story by David Leonhardt in the New York Times today, ahead of the Dartmouth announcement this morning, that they're going to reinstate a requirement for standardized testing in the Dartmouth admissions process. And David Leonhardt is a super thoughtful guy. You can disagree with him or agree with him, take your pick, but he's like one of the three human beings I know who can speak in a fully formed paragraph, topic sentence, and all. It's uncanny that way. I'm super jealous. But it was really interesting to read this article and why Dartmouth is doing this. The short version, the TLDR of it, is that Dartmouth found, after doing a bunch of research with data and Dartmouth faculty members who are skilled in these subject areas, that disadvantaged kids were not reporting scores that, while lower than Dartmouth's average SAT score, would still have gotten them admission because Dartmouth understands that they come from disadvantaged communities. And I think that's really interesting because the criticism has always been that SAT scores advantage the advantaged kids much more, and there is still some data that shows that. But the idea that disadvantaged kids are not reporting because they think their scores don't measure up without understanding the entirety of the process speaks to the opacity of that process. But also, you know, these scores do these kids some good, and that's what Dartmouth is all about. It was super interesting, super, super interesting article. David's very thoughtful. I totally recommend it. We'll put it on the show page. And you know, my 16-year-old now is in hell for another like 5 or 6 days, and then she gets to be done.
I know. I thought that story was super, super interesting too. I'm curious, where do you think this ends up? Like 5 years from now, are we back to where we were with requirements? You think that's where this goes?
I totally do. I totally do. It's a data point. The schools want data points. There will be hue and cry, much of it deserved, about the socioeconomic disparities. And maybe we can work toward fixing that somehow and providing access to tutoring programs and all of that jazz, right? SAT prep and all that. I think it was a COVID inspired change that will not last through the post pandemic era.
It's yet another pandemic social development that seems to be dissipating.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Smiles, Charlton, button, push. There we go. Charlton hates me. What do you got, man?
You go first, Kai, because I think mine is the smile of all smiles.
Well, that's true. Go ahead. So, look, this is a little dorky, but I'm just going to do it anyway. So, I wake up this morning, and I read all yesterday's coverage, and I saw a little bit of this last night. Coverage of Jay Powell, the chairman of the Fed, on 60 Minutes, which aired last night, saying, we're not going to cut interest rates until we have lots more data. And the internet, you know, my Twitter feed was abuzz with it. And then this morning, the markets opened down 250 points on the Dow, which is like 7/8%, not a whole bunch, but, you know, a lot of red ink as it goes, as you're watching the CNBC screen go by. And it's because Powell said he wasn't going to cut interest rates without more data, which is what he said on Wednesday. And we all said it then. And oh, my God, are the markets idiots. Jesus. He literally, so look, on Wednesday, Powell was wearing, and I noted this because Nancy Vergali, the producer of Marketplace, and I have a little running joke about what Powell wears on press conference days and purple ties and all this. Powell was wearing a blue suit and a purple tie. The next day, 60 Minutes releases stills from the interview, and it's the same purple tie, and it's the same blue suit. He went from the press conference where he said, I'm not going to cut interest rates without more data, to a interview in which he said, I'm not going to cut interest rates without more data. And everybody goes, oh, my God, it's news. The Powell said this. I cannot even with freaking all of this stuff. Just very frustrating. And I realize that's not a smile. That's more of a rant. But it's my podcast. I can do what I want.
It's the same thing many times.
That's right.
Is there any chance Jay Powell is just a one suit guy?
No, I don't think so. Powell's been around for a long time in those circles. He, unlike me, a public radio guy who is exactly zero suits now, he has one sport coat and a pair of pants. Powell has many suits and many ties.
You don't have a suit.
I had. So look, all my ties are too wide. They are out of fashion. And the suits that I have no longer, they don't work anymore. They're not skinny. They're not slim, any of that jazz. They just don't. I've got suits, but they're all freaking, 15-year-old suits.
I have like a double-breasted, like Dave Letterman type suit there that I bought in like my early 20s. I look like a NBA draft prospect from like the mid-90s. It's awesome. Okay, I will jump in on my... Make me smile. Thank you, Marissa, for passing this one along. It's the Puppy Bowl, Kai. It's the Puppy Bowl.
Yes.
Sunday is the Puppy Bowl. Obviously, this is the direct competitor to the Super Bowl, except with puppies.
Is it better?
Yes. And we'll put in the show notes a link to the adoptable dogs you can see in the Puppy Bowl. They're very, very, very cute. And, Janet had a really nice write-up about the Puppy Bowl last year and kind of the marketing opportunities of the Puppy Bowl, too. So we'll put that in the show notes as well. So,
for sure.
Puppy Bowl's just good.
No Taylor Swift, no Travis Kelce, just puppies. Just puppies. All right, we're out of here. Tomorrow we're doing a Tuesday show, one topic, one thing. We're talking about what's going on at the border right now. Oh, my goodness. And why immigration reform is so hard. And sadly, it's only going to be a half hour show, so we're not going to get into all of it because that's like 14 PhD theses.
Yeah. Until then, keep the comments and questions coming. You can leave us a message at 508-UB-SMART or email makemesmart@marketplace.org.
And on a Monday. This podcast, which is called Make Me Smart, is produced by Courtney Bergseeker. Today's program was engineered by Checking. Yes, Charlton Thorpe, still across from me behind the bulletproof, soundproof glass. Is it bulletproof? I don't know. We're never going to find out. Ellen Rolfes writes our newsletter. Our intern is Talia Menchaca.
Marissa Cabrera is our senior producer. Bridget Bodner is the director of podcasts. And Francesca Libby is the executive director of digital.
I wonder if it's even soundproof. Is it soundproof? I mean, there's like an air gap in there, but...
I would think so.
Charlton's in my ear now going, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Jerez, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read... Well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.